All right, we're going to start on the top of Gimel and Aleph. The Gemara is going to continue with the sugya that we just left off with, which was discussing how to explain the words in the Mishnah. Right, the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta said, "Ashutvim shvatzu lasot mechitza b'chatzer." Right, so the Gemara wants to know what is lasot they want to do a mechitza. What's the what is this mechitza that they want to do over here? So the Gemara before introduced the possibility that it was first a guda, it was a wall, and the second possibility was lechatzot, that it was the split. Now the Lishna Achrina is basically going to reverse. The Gemara is going to start with the premise that it's the split, and then try to flip back to being a wall. So that's the, now, Lishna Achrina, Amri lo, Sabrua, right, that this is another Lashon, if they did it this way, Sabrua, they thought, my mechitza, what does mechitza mean? Plukta, to divide up. Why is that? Dichtiv, because of the same pasuk that we used yesterday, right, tehi, Mechzat ha'ida, right, the half of the Eida, meaning that that which belonged from the spoils of the war of Midian that belonged to the Eida. So again, Mechzat or Mechitza can mean a half or division. V'kevin shiratzu bonim et hakotel bal kocham. Once they agree to that that split or division of the property, then we say that they must build a kotel, they must build a wall. And once they have to build a wall, Alma, Hezek Riyash, Me Hezek. So it must be that if the, once you decide that you're going to divide up the property, and you decide that it must be built, or the way to divide it is with a wall, that means that you believe that Hezek Riyash, Me Hezek, that the ability of another person to see into your property is considered or classified as hezek, and therefore the only way to rectify it is to put up a proper wall in this instance. Now, because if the Mishnah says that we put up a kotel, we put up a wall. So if we put up a wall, why do you have to put up a full-fledged wall? If the whole idea is just to simply divide the property, right, then you can put up any sort. I mean, putting up a border between two properties does not necessitate a full-fledged wall. The fact that the Mishnah says that after we want to divide it, we must put up a full-fledged wall, that's indicative of the fact that there must be a problem of Hezek Ri'ah beyond the simple division of the property. So where it says, why do you have to say that? Ema, my mechitza, guda. Why do you have to say mechitza means to split? Let's say mechitza means guda, means an actual wall. So Gemara says, why? That's not the Tanya. We have a braisa, mechitza da kerem shenifritza. Right? So again, the same quote that we had from yesterday, right? That a wall that divides between a vineyard and, say, for instance, tvuah and grains, shenifritza, that there were breaches in that wall. Omelor gdor, the person, the tvuah, the bala tvuah says to the bala kerem, you know, fix it. Nifritza, if it breaks again, omelor gdor, he says to him again, fix it. Nityaishimeno, if he gives up, meaning that he doesn't rectify the situation, velo gadra, and he doesn't put up or rectify the wall, fix the wall, harizek kidesh, then it causes a problem, you know, meaning in terms of being mekadesh, the kilaya kerem, v'chaya b'achriyuta, and the bala kerem is then responsible for the loss that's caused to the bala tvua because of the kilaya kerem that is placed here. But obviously the brace is being brought to show us that the word mechitza here means actually a wall. Mechitza to kerem is literally a physical wall that separates between the kerem and the tvua. So Mar says, v'tayim adoratzu. The only reason that we divide here is because they both acquiesce. The two parties acquiesce to have a division here. Halo ratzu, had they not acquiesced, ein mechayvin oto, we would not obligate them. I mean, the only reason that we say that you divide over here is because they both agreed to divide. Had they not agreed to divide, then we don't obligate them. Alma hezek ria lo shlav shme hezek. So again, the conclusion. I'm sorry? Right, their agreement is to build a wall. Their agreement is to build a wall. Without that agreement, we wouldn't build the wall, and that means that we won't compel them to build a wall. Now, if we don't compel them to build a wall, the conclusion from that is Alma, right? That Hezek Ri'ah Lav Shmei Hezek. That Hezek Ri'ah is not an issue here, because if it was an issue, then we could compel either party, even without the acquiescence of both parties. Either party can compel the other party to put up a wall because they want to prevent Hezek from happening over here, and that wouldn't be right an issue. So conclusion again would be that Hezek Ri'ah Lav Shmei Hezek. Mara says, Ihochi, if you want to say that Guda is the explanation over here, then Bonim et HaKotel, Bonim Oto Mi Bayalei. Right? The same way that we had in the first Lashon yesterday, that was the conclusion. Here in this Lashon, it's the first section, which is that if you really say Bonim et HaKotel, putting up a mechitza means put up a wall, then the Mishnah should read, meaning the Rosh Hashanah says, Ashutvim shiratzu lasot mechitza, the definition of the word mechitza now is kotel. So, Ashutvim shiratzu lasot kotel, bechatzer bonim et hakotel. You wouldn't write the word kotel twice. You would use a pronoun in the second instance. You would use the word oto. So, the fact that you don't use the word oto is indicative that the first word must not be kotel, because otherwise you wouldn't have to repeat the word twice. So the Gemara says, well, if you think that the other solution is better, elamai plukta, what do you want to suggest? That the word mechitza here means division, not a wall. Ihachi sharitzu lasot mechitza. Why should the Mishnah read that they wanted to make a wall? It should read sharitzu lachatzot mi by that. They wanted to divide. Right? So why the Lashon doesn't work according to the other way either? Gemara says, no, according to that Lashon does work. So get the amre yinshe, the way people say, or the common phrase, ta na'avid plukta, let us go make a wall. Right, or let us go make a, dividing wall. Meaning that when they say divide, they don't simply say divide, but they also say build a wall to divide. So that it's not, the Lashon of the Mishnah could also reference a division and not simply the building of a wall. The Gemara says, okay, he hezek riyah shme hezek. Right, so if hezek riyah is really considered or classified as hezek, my iriyah ratzu. I mean, according to this Lashon that says they were dividing up the property, then what is the issue of Ratzu here? Ratzu becomes irrelevant. I mean, once you believe that Hezek Riyah is Shmei Hezek, then whether they want it or don't want it is irrelevant. It's, as long as one party wants to have his privacy or wants to be have this Hezek prevented, he can compel the other party to build the wall. Why do we have our Mishnah saying Ratzu all of a sudden? What is the Ratzu coming from? So the Gemara says, "Afilu l'ratzu nami." Even if they don't want it, you can compel them. So the answer is, "Amar Avasi, Amar Rabbi Yochum, Nishtatenu k'shein ba din chaluka." This is something we're taking for granted all along. And when we explained the Gemara yesterday, we said this, but that there is no din chaluka. What does that mean? Ain't din chaluka? It means that there's less than 8 amot. Right? The only way that a chatzer you can compel the other party to divide the chatzer is when there's 4 amot for each party. In this instance, there's less than 4 amot for each party. Therefore, you cannot compel them to divide the property. If that's the case, it's only Ratzu. Ratzu is not about whether they have to build a wall or not. The Ratzu is whether they want to divide. You cannot force the division of the property unless both parties agree. Once both parties agree, then you can force them to build a full wall because that's the only way to properly divide up the property and prevent Hezek Riyah. Gemara says, "Vehu de Ratzu, my kamashlan." Oh, so what is our mission is coming to teach us this idea that both parties have to agree when there's not an 8 amot in the chatzer, both parties have to agree to the division, right? Where it says, "Dechi leitle din chaluka ki ratzu plige," that's what you're coming to teach us, that the kamash malan, that when there is no din chaluka, right, that only when they want it, you divide it. Tanina, we have an explicit Mishnah that says that. Ematai, we're going to see this right in a couple of daf. Ematai, b'zman shein shneim rotzim. That's only when both of them don't want it. Even if it's less than the 8 amot, they can divide it up. So Gemara says, we have an explicit Mishnah. What do I need the first Mishnah to teach me the same din again? Gemara says, that they have even less than that. Yes, you can force the division of the property, but it doesn't tell you how that division should look. What is the divider that you must put up? Our Mishnah comes to teach you, or the first Mishnah in the parak comes to teach you, once you've agreed to divide it, let me tell you what type of divider you need. What type of divider you need is a kotel. Why? Because that's Hezek Riyah is Shmei Hezek. Kamash Balan, Hocha, Kotel. Right, that's why our Mishnah comes and teaches us Kotel. Here it comes and teaches that the proper division, once you've agreed to divide, is a Kotel in order to prevent Hezek Riyah. Gemara says, Litneha, Velo Linehoch. Let us just write the first Mishnah in the Perek. Why do you need the second Perek, Mishnah in the Perek? The first Mishnah tells us both dinim. It tells us that if it's less than 8 amot, they both have to agree to divide it. And it tells us the other din, that how do you divide it? What's the divider that you use? It's a kotel. Then what does the Mishnah on Yud Aleph have anything? What is it teaching us that's not learnt from the first Mishnah? I don't need that second Mishnah at all. Gemara says, no, you do need that Mishnah because of the seifa of that Mishnah. Right? Gemara says, no, that's it. The hach seifa it's tzrichalei. We need the second half of the Mishnah that right, when it comes to Ktivei HaKodesh, right, there are certain things that even when both parties or both partners agree to divide it, we don't allow them to divide it, and that's Ktivei HaKodesh. That's whether it's a Torah or Nevi'im that have a whole Sefer or a whole, right, all of the Treyasar together, whatever the whole book of the Ktivei HaKodesh they have, we don't let you divide it in half to split up between partners. That is not permitted. So that Mishnah is addressing it's the second half of the Mishnah that's really the Chiddush. First half of the Mishnah, En Ochanami, you don't need it because we know that at all from the first Mishnah in the Perek. Right now, there are, if you look here, there are parentheses over here, and the parentheses go all the way down to the two dots. Right, this girsa is not found in many Gemaras. I'm going to skip it. The next Gemara, if you see, you can read through it yourself. You see that if you read this Gemara, it's really the next Gemara really addresses all the issues in this piece of the Gemara, and it seems almost unnecessary, that part of the Gemara. Right, so I'm going to skip down. If you see the two dots, I'm going to start from there. But my ukimta, the matnitan. Right, now you're going to establish that a Mishnah b'shein ba din chaluka. Our Mishnah is a case where there isn't enough for din chaluka, which means that there's not a sufficient etamot here. If shein ba din chaluka, kiratsu may have. Right, so what? So what that they agreed to divide the property? What type of obligation do they have once they agree? Meaning that's dvarim ba'alma. Right, that's all you have here. Nahadru b'hu, let them go back on their word. I mean that they don't have to, there's no kinyan over here. There's nothing over here that forces them or compels them to hold or to go forward. Now, as Tosus points out, but when it comes to a guda, a wall, already over there, there's something on which the kinyan can be chal. Over there, you already can say, right, that there was a kinyan because his mishabed is nechasim to purchase the wall, right, to binyan a kotel, to building of the wall. But over here, the only agreement they had was to divide the property. To divide the property, where do you have any form of kinyan over here or any form of obligation which says I can't back out of it? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan Shekanu Miyado, that they actually took, they made a kinyan. They made a formalized. We saw this in the end of Baba Metzia, right? David, you asked about it when we looked at it over there. But Mishkan Miyadan means that they do some sort of formal kinyan in order to, right, to emphasize that there is a Gemira Tadat over here. So they do some sort of kinyan that says, oh, now there is Gemira Tadat. The Gemara says, V'chi Kanu Miyadan my Havi. Why does that help? Why does Kanu Miyadan help here at all? Have a kinyan Dvarim Ba'almahu. That's Kenyan Devarim Ba'alma. Now, the way Rashi explains over here, what does it mean that's Kenyan Devarim Ba'alma here? He says, because if you do it like a Kenyan Chalipin, any form of Kenyan has to have an object on which the Kenyan is Chal. There has to be some sort of focus, right, of the Kenyan in which the Kenyan is Chal. Over here, there's nothing on which the Kenyan can be Chal. All they have is they have a Chatzer that is Eino Nitan L'Chaluka. They agreed to divide it up, but they have yet to divide it. So now, on what are they making a Kenyan? They're making a kinyan chalipin, and there's nothing on which the kinyan can be chal. There's no object on which the kinyan can be chal. And that's important, the distinction between why the Gemara in Baba Metzia, Tosfos mentions over here, and Socher Tapolim, we said, Mishikanu biyado, it works. How come over there it works and we don't say Dvarim ba'almahu? Because over there, there's something on which the kinyan can be chal. Because it's Tosfos, if you look here in Tosfos, he says, kinyan Dvarim ba'almahu. He says, Tznan matne shomer chinam liot kishoel, umuki labishikanu biyado. Hatam lav kinyan dvarimhu elakinyan gamurhu shemeshabed et atzmo shemyenas yishalem. He's creating a shibud on himself. There's something on which the kinyan is being chal. Over here, there is no shibud. There is no object on which the kinyan is going to be chal. So it's a kinyan dvarim ba'almahu. So what's the solution? Amar says, first solution is vishakanu miadan beruchot. They actually divide the property. They physically divide the property. But that's not what they did. All they obligated themselves to do was divide the property. They haven't obligated themselves to build. But that's all they've done. All they've done is to mishab themselves to build a wall. They haven't mishab themselves to the division. I mean, that you could divide, you could actually separate between the two issues. I mean, that there is no kinyan on the issue of the division, and he can walk away from the division. It could jointly build a wall that's not going to be down the middle. I could build a wall together. The shibud that you're asking for, even if you agree, if what you're saying is right, that a pol yotze of the division is that you must build a wall, the only shibud you have is now is to build a wall. You don't have a shibud to hold to the division of the property, and that's the problem over here. There's no way to do it. How do they solve that problem? The Gemara says they actually divide the property. Now, once they've divided the property, then you've solved the problem. Why? Because when you made a kinyan chalipin, then you're making the chalipin on the object, on the piece of the property that you want or that the other person wants, meaning that you have something on which it's chal. Beforehand, the property is mixed, right? And you can't do a kinyan chalipin on it because there's nothing on it to be chal because each person jointly owns every piece of the property. But now, in this instance, right, once this is done, What do you have? You have it that each one has their own property. Once they have their own property, you can have a kinyan chalipin that's chal on the property itself that they've divided. So now we have a kinyan that forces them not to back out of the situation. Rav Ashi Amar, kagon, shalach zeh betoch shelo v'achzik, v'zeh betoch shelo v'achzik. Right? What we know this from karka. One of the kinyanim for karka is a kinyan chazaka. What's a kinyan chazaka? Is that you work the borders of your property. You go see what needs to be done on the borders of the property. Tosa says, what's Rav Ashi adding? We know that kinyan chazaka works by karka. What is Rav Ashi all of a sudden suggesting? Wow, they walk the borders of the property. There's a kinyan. Of course, there's a kinyan. You have a kinyan chazakah. So he says that even though when we saw this together earlier in the Gemara in Baba Kamo, right, that the when you go and make a kinyan, a chazakah on the property, you have to say lech chazek ukne. You have to go say the other individual has to go and make a kinyan on the property. Lech chazek ukne. What Rav Ashi's chiddush is here, you don't need that. That it's implicit in their agreement that lech chazek ukne, you don't need him to explicitly say, go make a kinyan on it. Even if you just walk the property, that'll be sufficient to be chazaka or be a kinyan in this instance over here. So that's the Gemara's conclusion is how do we have it that it's irreversible, their agreement to split the property? Is mishikana biyado? Mishikana biyado either manifests itself in the fact that they actually physically split the property and therefore there's the kinyan's chal on that split, meaning that each one now has their own property, or the possibility is of that they do a kinyan chazaka, they each walk the property, and the chiddush of that is that nobody told them to do it. Lech chazek ukne, that's implicit already in their agreement, and that's considered classified as a good kinyan. Now, makom shenagoliv not. So now the Gemara is going to explain. We already explained this together. We learned this in the Gemara Baba Metzia. We learned it again when we did the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to explain what all the items are in the Mishnah. When you build this wall, what are these materials that they're talking about? Gemara says, Gvil. What's Gvil? Avnei de lo mishafyo. Those are stones that are not hewn, that aren't cut, right, perfectly. They're still got rough edges on them. Gazit is Avnei de mishafyo. Gazit is something that has carved. It's done well. Dichtiv, right? Called Eile Avanim Yekarot, right? This is according to Midot Gazit. This is according from the Moachim Aleph here about the building of the Beit HaMikdash. So it's all Kleben Yekarot, Midot Gazit, right? Migrirot, Bimigra, Mibayit, Umichutz, right? Umisad, Ad Hitafchot, Umichutz, Ad HaChatzer HaGdola. So you see there from the Pasuk that they clearly cut the rocks. They had hewn the rocks and they were shaped. So that's what this gazit means. Gazit means shaped rocks that they've been cut properly. Right now, kfisin. What are kfisin? Arichei. That's half bricks. Levinim are livnei, are real bricks. So Amalei Rabba Braid the Rabba the Ravashi. Mimai de Gvil Avnei de Lomashafian inu. How do you know that Gvil are rocks that are not hewn or not cut properly? Bahai Tefachitera. So why do you require 6 tvachim? I mean, each party has to give 3 tvachim by Gvil, and by the case of Gazit, they only have to give 5 tvachim, I mean 2.5 each. Why do you have to give 1 tefach less? So our underlying assumption was that they had to give the extra tefach because the rocks are rough edged. You need more space to place the rocks in to make the wall. So he says, why do you have to say that? Right? Why? High tefach yeter the moshe the karnata, because the whole reason you need that extra tefach is for the sharpness or the edges of the rocks. Dilma, palga de gazitu. Who says that it's that, why can't we learn it the same way we learn by the bricks? Why by the bricks is a half brick bigger than a full brick? A full brick is 3 tefachim wide. A half brick is 4 tefachim wide because we put a half brick on each side and we put a tefach, a filler in the middle. Why don't you say the same thing by gvil? Say gazit is a whole hewn rock or stone. Then if you cut it in half, then what do you have to do? You have to put a half on each side and fill it with the tefach in the middle. Why don't you describe it in the same manner? So he says, Dilma, palga de gazitu, it's half of a gazit, v'hai tefach yiteira. So why do you need 6 tefachim by gvil and only 5 tefachim by gazit? Levene urbe, right, who? Because that is the, for the filler material in the middle, kedamridan. Just like we say by kfisin. What are kfisin? Arichei. Levenim livne. And livne are bricks, and kfisim are half bricks, v'hai tefach yiteira. So why for half bricks do you have 1 extra tefach of width? Levene urbe. For the filler material that goes in between. So Amalei, Belimi Tamech, he says, according to your reasoning, Kvisim, right? Well, how do you know Kvisim Arichei? How do you know those are half bricks? Minolan. How do you know that Kvisim are half bricks? Ella, Gemara Gemirila. That's the Mesorah that we have that Kvisin are half bricks and that they put a tefach of filler. If it's Gemara Gemirila, Gvil, Nami, Avnei Delam Shafia, Gemara Gemirila. If you're really dealing with Mesorah, then why do you have to worry about this part of the Mishnah says this and this part of the Mishnah says something else? If the whole thing is premised on a Mesorah, you wouldn't have known it otherwise. Then the whole thing could be a Mesorah. And that's the Mesorah, is that Gvil means uncut, unhewn rocks, whereas Ariche means half bricks, and they have filler, and the Gvil does not have filler. So it's Gemara's Ikadam, right? The Gemara has it the other way around. Amalei Rav Acha Brei de Rav Avya Vaha the Rav Ashi. Mimai de Hai Kvisin Ariche Ninu. How do you know that these Kvisin mean half bricks? Vai Tevach Yitera. And this Tevach Yitera is Lebeni Urbe is for the filler. Dilma Mai Kvisin. What are Kvisin? Avnei de Lomish Afyon. Let's say Kvisin are rocks that were not, right, or I'm sorry, or rocks that were not shaped or shaven down. Vai Tevach Yitera Lemurshur de Karnoto. And that's for the sharp edges. Kedamrina Gvil. Right, just like we say gvil, avnei delo mishafnin. Just like we say by gvil, these are stones that are not shaped. Gazit, avnei mishafnin, and gazit are hewn or shaped rocks. Ma'itevach yitera, the murshe de kanata, is for the sharp edges. So why don't we say the same thing by a bricks? We'll say that the whole bricks don't have any sharp edges. The half bricks have sharp edges, so therefore you have to leave the extra tefet because of the sharp edges and not because of the fact that you need filler material over here. So he says, Amar Abaye, I'm sorry, Amalei, well, the Tamech, Gvil, Avdin, Delo, Mishafni, Minolan. According to your reasoning, how do you know that Gvil is really rocks that are not shaped, they're not hewn? Ela Gemara Gemila, that's a Mesorah. If that's a Mesorah, Hachanami, Gemara Gemila, this is also a Mesorah that the bricks or the Kfisin are half bricks and the extra Tefach is filler material. So basically, you can't ask how they know this. They know this because Gemara Gemila, these are all Mesorahs about what these words mean and how they are built and the proper way to build these walls. So now, Amar Abaye, Shmamina, Kol Beni Urbe Tefach, that any filler is classified as a Tefach. Tefach is classified as a filler. Somebody says, Hani mile betina. That is only true when it comes to pouring of plaster or cement, right, inside, in between. Aval berichsa baitve. When it comes to richsa, you need more. So what is richsa? Richsa is, it seems to be, it's almost more like a cement mixture, which is that it is small gravel with the plaster or the cement put together, meaning that it's almost like a mixture of the plaster plus little stones or gravel versus simply putting in the plaster or the cement in between. So there you need more. Vikadam, right? Hane mili birichsa. Some people say it's the other way around. That when you need a tefach is when you use the mixture, use the gravel plus the plaster. Of albatina, lo baikule hai. If it's simply the plaster or the cement without any gravel in it, then you don't need that much. So lehai. Lememra. So to tell. Now, so that's the end of a bias statement. Now, the Gemara says lememra. To be gazit, when it comes to a gazit, chodala damot gova, if I put your chamsha koi. That had, what's a structurally good wall? A structurally good wall, we know from the Mishnah coming out, we mentioned this yesterday, that you only have to build the wall up to 4 amot. He can only compel him to build the wall to 4 amot high. How wide is the base to get up to 4 amot? We said when it comes to gazit, how wide is the wall? The wall has to be 5 tefachim wide. So the conclusion for this would be to get a wall that has integrity to it, you'd have 5 tefachim of a base will get you 4 amot high. But that would conclude, the Gemara wants now, extrapolate that. How do you extrapolate that? That means if you wanted to build an 8-amot wall, how wide would you have to have the base? The base would have to be 10 tefachim wide. The Gemara seems to think that it's a linear relationship between the size of the base and the height of the wall. The Gemara is going to challenge that linear relationship. It says, Gemara says, L'memra d'begazit, t'chol dalet amot gova, yav yaputcha chamsha koi, ilo lo koi. Vaha, what's the example from? Amatraxin. What's the amatraxin? The amatraxin is the space between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's the Ama that sits between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That Ama in the first base of Mikdash had a parochet on one side and a parochet on the other side. And the Ama in the middle, the Kohen used to walk, right? In the first base of Mikdash, they had a full wall there with a door, and the Kohen used to go to it. In the second base of Mikdash, they had a curtain. They had a parochet on one side of the Amah, parochet on the other side of the Amah, and the Kohen Gadol used to walk between them to get into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Why? Because they didn't know if that Amah belonged to the Kodesh or belonged to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So they hung a parochet on each end. So now, the Havai, in the first base of Mikdash, how high was this Amah Traksin? It had a begova, it's Latin Amhata. It was 30 amot high. In the Mikdash that Shlomo built, the wall between the Kodesh Kedoshim was 30 amot high. V'lava puchi el shit, and its width was simply an amah. An amah is 6 tfachim, right? Sit pushche. The width is only 6 tefachim. So now you have 6 tefach, gets you 30 amot. In our Mishnah, we have 5 tefachim, getting you 4 amot. So it's clear the relationship is not linear. So Gemara says, v'kam, and it stood. Gemara says, kevin deika tefachay tera koi. That's exactly the point. The point is the relationship is not linear. That extra tefach of a base allows you to go much higher. So you don't need 5 tefachim, it will not be linear. Every 4 amot, you need another 5 tefachim, but rather one extra tefach gets you from 4 amot all the way up to 30 amot. So now, what does this word troksin mean? The Rabbeinu Tam says the word troksin means trok gali, means go reveal. Trok means gali, reveal. And sin means from Sinai. Reveal or cover up that which is revealed from Sinai. What was behind the wall? What was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Were the luchot. So the troksin is what divides and blocks for you from seeing what came from Har Sinai. The other part about troksin means troksin means going in, out, inside and out. Because the troksin, right, was we weren't sure if it belonged to the inside or the outside. All right, now, this, the Gemara says, U'mimikdash sheni, my time alo avud ama troksin. In the second base of Mikdash, which I described to you already, they hung parochet, they hung curtains, instead of putting up a wall. Why? Ki koi b'tzlatin koi, tvei lo koi. Mer says that there was a limit to how high the wall could go. 30 amot is the cap. At 6 tefachim wide, 1 amot base, you're going to get up to 30 amot. Beyond 30 amot, which the second base of Mikdash, the Kodesh Kodeshim were higher than 30 amot, it would not support such a wall. Mer says, umilalon davi gvoa tvei. How do you know that the second base of Mikdash had a higher wall than the first base of Mikdash? Because it says by the second base of Mikdash that the kavod of the second bait will be greater than the first base of Mikdash. Now it's clearly not in the Shekhinah because the Aron's missing, the Luchot are missing, right? That they're not there in the second base of Mikdash. So what does it mean that the second base of Mikdash is greater? So Rabbi Shmuel, Vamrila Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar argue, Chadamar b'binyan, that the structure was bigger, v'chadamar b'shanim, that it lasted longer, right? So the one who says the structure is bigger, right? The chadamar binyan, and it happens to be that both are true. Both are true, that the binyan itself, the building structurally was bigger than the first base of Mikdash, and secondarily, that it lasts, secondly, it also lasted longer than the first base of Mikdash. According to Chazal, how is that true? That's true because v'italah, you have both of them. So when by the second base of Mikdash, the second base of Mikdash was eventually built and then renovated by Herod. When Herod renovates it, the Mikdash is significantly bigger. That's what we see today. The remnants of what Herod built right around the Mikdash, because he renovated the Mikdash and built a much bigger structure. So we know that it was bigger. We also know that it lasted longer. According to Chazal, the first base of Mikdash lasted for 410 years, and the second base of Mikdash lasted for 420 years. According to, you know, secular historians, it probably there's very good, compelling evidence that the second base of Mikdash lasted much longer and was around for, you know, from somewhere between 565 to 590 years, meaning that depending on how many Persian kings you think in between. But even according to the other historians, the second base of Mikdash lasted significantly longer than the first base of Mikdash. So both of those are true. If the binyan is bigger, the Gemara says, above 30 amot, you can't get up there. The Gemara says, v'na'avdu tflatin amin b'vinyan. Right? Why don't they do at least build up to 30 amot? They'll have a wall that's up 30 amot and then put a parochet above that point. Why don't you build at least the minimum amount of wall that was still sufficient in the first base of Mikdash? Where it says, Ki kai tlatin amhata nami agav tikru maziva. No, the only way that 30 amot stand is when it has pressure from on top of it. In the first base of Mikdash, the wall was 6 tefachim wide at the base, an ama, went up 30 amot, but that 30 amot then reached the top of the binyan. When it reached the top of the binyan, the pressure from the building, the tikra, that was above it, that held it in place, and that gave it support. The problem in the second base of Mikdash is if you have 6 tefachim wide, and then you build a 30 amah tall wall, then it won't have enough structural support, because the top or the roof won't sit on it to give it structural support. So when it says, that won't be. So when it says, v'la'avid, the obvious question is, v'la'avid ma'de'efshar. So, okay, you can't get to 30 amot. We know you could at least build 4 amot because 5 tefachim is sufficient for 4 amot. So it's got to be somewhere between 4 and 30. You could build a wall that has integrity to it. So if you're going to build a wall that has integrity and then you just put a parochet above that point in time. Gemara says you can't do that. Why? Because Amar Abaye Gemire, that we have a Mesorah. Ikulu b'binyan, ikulu b'parochet. You have a choice. You can only have one of two things. Either you have a wall or you have a parochet. You can't have a mixture of both. Why? Ikulu b'binyan mi'mikdash. We learn out that you can have a wall that's built there from the Mikdash Rishon. Ikulu parochet we have from the Mishkan. So either you have a parochet or you have a binyan. We don't have a mix between a kotel and a parochet. So now once you have that answer, that you could answer for the previous issues also about how come they didn't build it 30 amot high, because then you would also had half wall, half parochet. But once you get to this point, you have to either have all parochet, all binyan. You can't make it all binyan. Then we got to make it into a parochet. Now, the Gemara asks a question. The numbers that are given in the Mishnah for the width, is that the width of the stones or the bricks? Or is that the width of the stones, bricks, plus the plaster that goes on the facing of the bricks? The widths or the measurements that are given in the Mishnah is them plus the plaster that goes on it. Or it's them without the plaster. So Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Mistavra Hein V'Sidan. Makes sense to say it's the bricks plus the plaster. Disachadatla Hein Below Sidan. If it's them without the plaster, Litnei L'Shiurei. Then they should give in the Mishnah the amount of space that each one has to contribute in order to have the bricks or the rocks plus the plaster. Elav Shma Mino Hein V'Sidan. It must be that the Mishnah is enumerating the space that it is for the bricks, the stones, and the plaster. Mar says, Lo, the Olam Emelecha Hein Below Sidan. So why does the Mishnah only giving us or enumerating for us the bricks and not the Sidan? Because the plaster is just a facing on the bricks. It's not something that takes up a full tefach. So since it's not a full tefach, the Mishnah didn't go out of its way to mention it's not really three tefachim, it's three and a little more. It's not six tefachim, it's six plus a little more. Because the plaster is an insignificant addition because it doesn't reach a tefach. So Rashi says, is that really true? V'haktani bilaveinim. When it comes to the bricks, we say zenotein tefach umeksa, zenotein tefach umeksa. Each one gives 2.5. So we see the Mishnah is willing to deal in halves over there. So why, if it's dealing in halves, can't it deal with the plaster? Rashi says, no. Hatam chazeitz terufei. Over there, each half will add up to a full tefach. Meaning that when you take 2.5 and 2.5, then you end up with 5. So since that's the full number, right? Then it works. Over here, our Gemara reads Levenim, which are bricks that are three tefachim, and each one is 1.5, right? The girsa that is better and probably makes more sense because that's mentioned first in the Mishnah is that it's really talking about the gazit, which is 5 tefachim, and that's 2.5 and 2.5. So it's 2.5 and 2.5 adds up. Each one of these cases, the half tefach together will equal a whole tefach. So that's why the Mishnah mentions it. But the plaster, it's a fraction, and it's a fraction that will never equal a whole, even if you add up both parties. Fraction of the plaster that's taken up over here. Okay, Mara says, okay, Tashma. We can learn it from the Mishnah in Erevin. The Mishnah in Erevin says, Hakorah Shamru. Right? When you have a Mavoi that you want to make it carryable in things to be able to carry on Shabbos within the Mavoi, you need a Korah or a Lechi. That Korah Shamru Rachva, what's the width of the beam that you put up across the top? It has to be, how big? Kedei Lekabel Ariach. How is it able to accept an Ariach? V'Ariach Chatzi Leveina. And an Ariach is half a brick, Shel Gimel Tfachim. That is 3 tefachim wide. So now, if that's the case, what are you going to say? You're going to say that, how wide is a brick? A brick is 3 tefachim wide. So that would be the answer. The answer now would be that the measurements given in our Mishnah are simply the bricks, not the plaster. Where it says, no, Hatam B'Rabrivita. The bricks that we're talking about by the Korah are big bricks. Dekanami, I could prove that you're talking about big bricks. The Tani Shel Shlosha Tefachim. Tells you that these should be bricks of 3 tefachim. Michlau, Dekazutra. That they're different size bricks. The fact that the Mishnah had to go out of the way to tell you that a brick is 3 tefachim tells you that there are other bricks that are not 3 tefachim. And that's a possibility in our Mishnah that the bricks are less than 3 tefachim plus the plaster gets you to 3 tefachim. So again, the Shema Mina means that the Gemara has concluded that the Mishnah includes the Sid with it. That their explanation of that Mishnah in Erevin, you would have to say now that there is Sid is included in the measurement here in our Mishnah. All right, now, the next part of the Gemara basically is a jump-off. It's a big agadata now, and it goes through halfway through tomorrow's daf as well, which is that we just said before that the second base of Mikdash was bigger than the first base of Mikdash. Why was the second base of Mikdash bigger than the first base of Mikdash? Because Herod renovated or rebuilt the base of Mikdash. So Gemara is going to start a sugya to ask a question whether you can really do such a thing. Are you allowed to renovate the base of Mikdash? The jumping-off point has to do with a Beit Knesset. One may not destroy or take down a shul before they have built the replacement shul. That the replacement shul must be present and usable before you take down the first shul. Ikedamre, b'shem pshuta. Some people say because we're afraid that when they take the first one down, they won't build the second one. Because they don't have a place to daven in the interim. They take it down. So my binayu, what's the nafkamina between these two reasons? Ika binayu, deikam makom, right? Or our girsa that in the parenthesis says beikanishta trichta. I don't think it means beikanishta. It could mean that other girsa is deikam makom achrite. There's another place to daven. It means as long as they have a place to daven, then according to that reason that says we don't want to take it down because they don't have a place to daven, they do have a place to daven. If they have a place to daven, take it, they can take it down, and then they'll build the second one. According to the one who says pshiuta, it doesn't matter that they have a place to daven. We're afraid that what you're going to take down the shul and it won't be rebuilt. Now, why does that matter? If they have a place to daven, and now you take down this shul, then why does it matter? In the end, if there is a pshuta and they don't build this other shul, they still have a place to daven. What's the problem here? So I heard from Rav Rosenzweig a nice thought, this idea that the shuls in a city, right, indicate the mamad, right, of the city, the standing of such a city, that if a city can boast that we have 20 shuls, we have 15 Beit Midrash, right, that is an indicative of the religious, right, stature of such a city. So when you go ahead and you destroy a shul without rebuilding a shul, even though they have a place to daven, right, that in itself, the destruction of a shul might diminish, right, the character of the city, or might diminish the religious character of the city. And therefore, it's a problem to destroy the shul, even, right, when you have a place or another place to daven. All right, now, the Gemara says, Marei Marzutra, Satre Ubanu, they used to take down a shul and rebuild it. Bekaita Besitva, they used to do it for the winter. They used to switch between summer and winter shuls. They used to build these heavy brick, small window buildings for a shul in the winter to stay warm. And in the summer, they used to Ubanu Besitva Bekaita, and they used to build a summer shul which was light and airy during the summertime. So now the Gemara does not, it seems almost, this seems almost counter to the previous Gemara, which is that the Gemara says you can't destroy shul to build a new one. So Tosfos over here gives three reasons why it works. We'll read the next Gemara, and after we read the next Gemara, I'll come back and explain to you the Tosfos of why they were permitted to do such a thing. All right, so now the Gemara says, Amarle Ravina the Ravashi, Gabe Zuze Umachte. What happens if they've already done the appeal, the building fund, and they have the money in hand? My, can they take down the other shul? Because now there's no more pshiuta, because they have the money in hand to build it. So Amarle, Dilma Mitramilu Pidyon Shvuin. Maybe they'll have the mitzvah Pidyon Shvuin to do, Vihavilu. Right? So then they're going to give up the money to do Pidyon Shvuim, and we have that from the Gemara Megillah. We know that Pidyon Shvuim is one of the top mitzvot that you're allowed to sell, like a Sefer Torah for, sell a Beit Knesset, right, in order to do Pidyon Shvuim. So here they collect it for the building fund, and all of a sudden they're going to have a chance to do Pidyon Shvuim. They're going to take the money, spend it, and the shul will not be rebuilt. So he says, wait, what happens if Shrigay, right, what happens if they have, Shrigay Velivne, Vahadre Hudure, Umachte Kishure? They have the bricks piled up. They have the pallets of bricks there. They have the roof shingle present. And Machte Keshure and the beams are ready. Meaning that they bought all the construction supplies. They don't even have the cash anymore. They bought the construction supplies. Can you take down the old shul? My. Amalei. Zimdim it ramilhu pidyon shvuim. Maybe pidyon shvuim will come. And mizavnate. They'll sell the building supplies via vilahu. And they'll use it for the pidyon shvuim. So where it says, Ihochi. If that's the case, afilu bonu nami. If they build a shul, they could sell the shul for Pidyon Shvuin. Now, Tosfos qualifies this. It says it's before they've davened it. Once they daven in the shul, they won't give up the shul so easily for Pidyon Shvuin. But before they've davened it and they've given it Kedusha, maybe they'll sell the building. So even to the point where you put up the shul, who says that they won't back out? People don't sell their home. It's a very it's a nice musar here. People don't sell their home. So that the Gemara here calls a person's shul his home, right? Not simply his house, but that your shul is also your home. It's a part of your house. And therefore, a person would not sell his house. So even though maybe Pidyon Shvuim come up, people would be reluctant to sell. Once the shul is up, they'd be reluctant to sell such a building in order to perform the Pidyon Shvuim. Where it says, Belom Ran, they only say this qualified statement that you're not allowed to take down the first shul before you put up the second shul is Ela Delo Haziba Tiyua, that there wasn't any structural flaws or problems in the building. If there are structural flaws or there is some sort of danger that the shul might fall down, then about Haziba Tiyua, if there is a problem, Satre Ubani, then you can take it down. We don't compel you to leave up a building that is condemned, right, or it's going to be problematic because of the danger involved with that. There, we permit you to take it down because it's dangerous to leave it up. So there, in that instance, you have permission to take it down and then put it up. Kihad Ravashi, Chazabat Yua, V'knishta de matamachsia, he saw a problem or structural problem in the Beit Knesset of matamachsia. Satre, he took it down. But he was makbid, he was machmir on himself. That what did he do? Ayol upuray lahatam. He put his bed in the building. Below afke had the matakin leishviche, and he didn't take it out until they put up the gutters on the building. Mina Ravashi knew that if they took it down first, then he might run into that problem, that they would get pshuta and they wouldn't put it up. So Ravashi, in order to compel or to ensure that the building got built, he moved in to the shul. He moved into the shul after it was destroyed, that empty space. So that pushed the balabatim or the people to rebuild the shul so that he would have cover and that he'd be shielded and it would get fixed. So he was Ravashi, obviously a big chacham, and he knew how to compel the people to do it, even though technically you were permitted to take it down first. Tosis, of course, asks, how could he sleep in the shul? That you're not allowed to do sleep in a shul, even in Bavel. Tosis at least concludes, Rashi believes you can't sleep in a shul in Bavel when you make a tanai. Tosis believes you cannot do it. So Tosis answers like the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim, which says that they had areas on the side of the shul which weren't kadosh, b'kedusha beit knesset, where the orchim used to stay, where the guests used to stay, and that's where he slept. He slept in that area. And until it was completed, the building was completed, he slept there in order to go encourage them to build the shul and ensure that it was built. Now, going back... It was already a shul. Now, the problem was it was already a shul. They took it down. It was a shul, and they had to take it down because of the problems, because they had to take part of the structure down because of the danger. So it was already a shul. You can't say they didn't make it a shul yet. It's already a shul. It already has a kedusha space of Knesset. Right, or they were, even if they're going to build a whole new building, it was in the place that the original shul existed. So the place, Makom, was already Mukdash for a shul. All right, so now Tosus, now going back to Tosus about how could it be that they took down the shul in the summer and the winter, they changed buildings. So Tosus gives three answers over here. First, he says that they ikatuyua, that they saw there was a problem. The building was, there were deteriorations in the building over the winter or the summer, and therefore they took it down. That's why they did it. Although it sounds from the Gemara that they did this on a regular basis every year, which I don't know if that would be such a compelling answer. He says, O Nira, de yeshim b'nei knesset acher in lachush. Tosus gives the other answer, which is that there was another shul, and they had another place to daven, so they didn't have to worry. And oh, the last one he says, Machmat kor v'chom en lachush, shema yipashu, o bezman gadol kolkach en lachush. That he said that they won't be posheya, because it was because it wasn't the problem of taking down the building there, it wasn't money or a problem with the structure. The whole issue was that it was the weather. So they just switched it over. It was something they did every year. It was something they did on a regular basis. And it was a shul that was then going to be used. They're not going to worry. They're not going to have a shul for 6 months. Right? 6 months a year, they wouldn't have it. No, they took care of it every year. And it was a natural transition that went on. And that's why it's not a problem. Now, this Gemara was brought because of the next line. And that is, Ubaba ben Buta, heche asbe le etza lehudus. Had it Baba ben Buta give advice to Hurdus, the mister of the Beit HaMikdash, to take down the Beit HaMikdash. When he wanted to renovate the Beit HaMikdash, he had to take it down first. So how could Baba Pumbuta permit Hurdus, or advise Hurdus, to take it down and then to rebuild it? Over there, you don't have the Nafkamina. I mean, there's no other place to go. The Beit HaMikdash is a unique structure. How could he advise him to take it down in order to renovate it? Until it's put up again, you can't take it down. So Gemara says, Ibaitema to you achazibe. They saw there was the Beis Mikdash had problems. It needed maintenance. I mean, there were problems in there in the structure. Ibaitema machuta shiny. That when it comes to the kingdom or the kings, delo hajibe, they don't go back on their word. I mean, that when they give their word, there's no such thing as a pshuta. Why? Damar Shmuel. If the Malchus, right, if the kingdom or the emperor says, we're going to take down this mountain, they're going to take the mountain down, they're not going to go back on it. Now, I think it's funny, I don't know if this is intentional, but that Shmuel made a statement about here in the context of Hurdus, right? Hurdus actually did that. Herod took down mountains, right? Herod, in order to build Herodian, right, cut down the mountain nearby and quarried all the rock and brought it up to build up Herodian to be the highest mountain. So Herod, who was a king, actually did that. He said, I'm going to take down the mountain, and that's what he did. He took down the mountain. So now, maybe, I don't know if that's like a play here by the Gemara or just coincidence, that Shmuel statement that they're going to take, that if the king says he's going to take down the mountain, he will take it down in the context of Herod. So here, at least, so now we say those are the two possibilities. Why we don't have the application of not destroying the Mikdash before you put up the new one is either because there was Tiyua, which is a permission by the Beit Knesset also, that there was a structural problem, or by Malchut Shaini, we believe that the king will never revert, you know, maybe there he won't back out of his commitment. Now, the Gemara is going to explain the whole story of Hurdus. So the Gemara says, Hurdus of the Beit Chashmonai. He was a servant, a slave, really, in the house of the Chashmonaim, Hava, Nataneinav, Bo'uto Tinoket. All right, so now, the Girsa here is a little messed up. The Girsa is clear in the Gemara Numa, but it basically, Yom Echad, one day he decided he wanted to marry a daughter, the only remaining daughter of the Beit Chashmonai. Basically, all of Beit Chashmonai had been killed out. There was one remaining woman or girl that was left over. And Herod, who's the one who killed out, we're going to see in a second, killed out all Beit Chashmonai, decided if he marries this woman, that would make him into the king or justify him being the king and not a slave anymore. So now, Yom Echad, Shamahu Gavra Bat Kala. Right, one day this man, meaning Hurdus, it doesn't make sense, probably should be how, right, Hurdus, Shama, right, Bat Kala, Hurdus heard a bat call, the Amar called Avda Demarid Hashta Matzlach. Any slave that rebels today will succeed. So guess what he did? Kam Katlino de Kulo Marute. He got up and he killed all of his masters who were Beit Chashmonai. Vishari Lahayu Nokta. The only thing left over was this young girl. Ki Chaza Hayu Nokta, the Kabaila Mintzva. When this young girl saw that he was going to marry her, Slika Leigra, she went up to the roof. Viramakala, she screamed out, Amra, Ko Madaate, V'amar Beit Chashmonai Katina. Anybody says I come from the Beit Chashmonai? Avdahu. He's a slave. Dolo Ishtare Minayu Ela Hayu Nokta. I'm the only one left. Vayunokta Naflam Igrala Ara. And I'm about to commit suicide. And basically, she did that. Right? She went ahead and committed suicide. So she says, there is no remnant of Beit Chashmonai. And you know for certain that he is a, right, that he is an Eved. So what did he do? Tamna Shevashnin Bedufsha. Herod went ahead and preserved this young girl in honey for 7 years. Why? Igadamri Bala, right? Some people say that he wanted to have relations with her, and that's why he kept her. Igadamri Lo Bala. No, he didn't keep relations. The Amri Lo Bala, the one who says that he had relations with her, had Tamna Lituve Yitzre. Why did he preserve her? In order to, satisfy his desires, because she would be there. Dami la bale, lo bale, the one who says he didn't have relations with her, haid the tamna, why did he preserve her? Gecha de nemru bat melech nasav, to say that he was actually married to this princess. I mean, to say that he was married and that he really was part of Beit Chashmonai. Amar mandorish, who's the one who said, mikerav achecha tasim alecha melech? And when it comes to placing a king over the Jews, it must be mikerav achecha. Mikerav achecha, the way Tosus learns it, the pashup shadow kerav achecha is, right, that from amongst your brethren and not from a non-Jew. But the chachamim are doresh, not only a non-Jew, but even a slave is not permitted to be the king. So Rabbanan, the Rabbanan are the ones who said that. So Mat Kam Katlinu the Kulu Rabbanan. He went ahead and he killed all the Rabbanan who say that he can't be the king. Except for Shavke the Baba Ben Buta, the Mishkal Eitzamine. He left over Baba Ben Buta in order to take advice from Baba Ben Buta. All right, we'll continue tomorrow. We'll continue tomorrow, which is about the story of Baba Ben Buta and his advice to Herod. But obviously the Gemara is almost doing flashbacks here. The Gemara started with the Sugya and now is coming back to get to this whole point about how did they destroy it? And then the whole story of how Herod goes ahead. Now they're flashing back again. How did Herod come to renovate the whole Mikdash? It's an interesting point in Rashi over here. Just look at the last line in Rashi. Rashi says, Heche Asbe Eitza Lohurdus. How did Baba Ben Buta give advice to Hurdus? Right? So how do we know that he did give advice to Hurdus? So he says, Rashi gives two sources for that. Kamrin and the Kaman B'Shmaitin. That's on the tomorrow's daf. It actually tells us that. There's the story there. And what's his second source? Uchtuvahi B'Yosifon Ben Gurion. It's written in Josephus. Right? So Rashi says it's written in Josephus, so it must be true. That's right. The source for Rashi. And it says the source of the Gemara, knowing that Baba Ben Buta gave advice to Herod, is from Josephus. Josephus marks that in his story over there. Josephus also writes that Herod actually married this woman. This young girl he actually married. Her name was Miriam. And that he married her and then he killed her. Right, which is true. We know that Herod killed all of he killed his sons, he killed his wives, he was paranoid, and he killed everybody. So the Gemara's story is that he never married her, or that he wanted to marry her, and that she was young, she committed suicide. Over here, Josephus' story is that he actually did marry her in order to get the trappings of the kingdom, but it's clear that the Chachamim did not accept him, and therefore he killed all the Chachamim, except for Baba Ben Buta, and we'll see tomorrow what the implications of him killing all the Chachamim were. Okay, we'll stop over here.